All right.
Good to have them too.
Good. That looks good, I think. Yeah, it's just after the cohort. The cohort is so intense.
Yeah.
And it always has kind of the same rhythm in some sense. Like week one is like super exciting. Everyone's super hyped. Week two is still okay, but already, you know, there's already a hole. Then it just goes down. Week four, everyone's depressed. Everyone hates everyone. Yeah. And then it goes up again.
I think there's at least like at least one quarter is like close to thinking about going home.
Yeah. No, that's why we let's go this way. The sooner we hit the tunnel, the more coolness we'll get.
Okay. Yeah.
We'll just we're gonna melt anyway. But yeah, no, people are. Yeah, that's why it's hard to get to, hard to leave is the magic formula. Because if it's easy to leave, then everyone will just leave. It's just too intense of a thing for most people.
Yeah.
And then, I think you're right. People, if they could, people would probably leave in like week three or week four.
If it was driving distance?
Yeah. So tell me about it. How was it for you? You're a veteran now, basically.
Yeah.
Veteran and captain and everything. Like, you did all the things.
Still doesn't make it any easier. Still bedridden the week after.
Oh, yeah.
You
get sick basically every single time, right?
Like, oh, yeah, that happened again, too. Yeah. It's I'm not good at learning quickly, because I have to get sick three times from what I'm pretty sure now is the tap water here. So, you know,
I drink tap water all the time.
Yeah.
Never had an issue, but you know,
we're not all as strong, I guess.
But you're recovered.
Yeah.
How was, apart from being sick, how was the eighth cohort for you?
Eight already. Well, once again, pretty intense, but it was good. Like the theme towards the end. It's like a lot of naplets, which I really like. Naplets plus FIPS and NixOS as well. Which I'm sure we'll
drank,
talk about.
You drank the Kool-Aid.
Yeah, I drank the potion.
You're fully NixOS filled now.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're four machines in the last weeks.
Yeah, you know, there's. Julian will be very happy about this. Justin will also be very happy about this.
I sent him a screenshot of my YouTube feed. It's like, what have you done to me? He was pretty pleased to see it.
No, it's a great system. It's very clanker friendly. I think that's, you know.
Yeah.
Like it was already great before the clankers came around.
Yeah, I considered like a couple of years ago already. I was like, oh, that looks cool. Like I was familiar with stuff like Terraform for cloud deployments.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, this is just like Terraform, but for the
for
system itself.
Yeah.
But I had read enough about the configuration language to be smart enough to avoid it. but that, of course, has changed with the clankers. So I'm, that's what converted me. And Omarchi.
Nix has a natural language interface now.
Yes.
So that makes it actually easy to use.
Yeah,
that's kind of what changed, right?
The replication worked amazing. Like I have like two desktop environments, one server. He's just like, okay, deploy. You know, I don't want FIPS on all of them.
Yeah.
Put FIPS on it, even on the Lux decryption, so before anything starts.
Yeah.
So I can decrypt my drive over FIPS.
I saw that
at the
demo.
FIPS, which is very satisfying, because I had a system set up with Lux, and then I was like, fuck, I don't have a screen or keyboard attached to it.
That's really cool. So you like even before, like is that a modified bootloader? You have to explain that to me again how that works. Like you have a very thin layer that loads just FIPS basically, right?
Yeah.
And that loads even before the Lux encryption kicks in.
Yeah. So you have your boot partition and swap for memory. They are both Lux encrypted. So when the device starts, it loads something called initrd, which is basically a very small Linux, like just the necessary packages with some networking. And you can add something to that. So I added FIPS. So that boots in memory, completely in memory on startup. And the only thing you can do there is enter the password and that's it.
Yeah.
So, and then once you enter the password, the partition, boot partition decrypts, and then your actual system boots.
What allows you to do, like, with that in place, you can SSH in via FIPS.
Yes.
Yeah. And decrypt.
Yeah, and there are different identities from the from the main boot.
Yeah, that's really cool. Yeah.
Running chickens.
Yeah. Yeah, there is a bunch there. Like, they're always around here.
Yeah, we call them cliff chicks.
The cliff chicks. Yeah, there you go. See, there.
Yeah.
There's the,
they live here on
the rooster and everything. Yeah. There's the whole family. There's a bunch, like 6, 7.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I just did the boomer, like the zoomer in me regrets this immediately. Oh my Lord. That's the thing, you know, the kids these days, they ruin everything. You can't even say 6, 7 anymore. Yeah. It's brutal. Can't even count chickens in peace. But yeah, we had some young people participate as well this time around. That was interesting. Yeah.
Some good games were presented with Nostra integration. That was cool. I loved seeing that, actually. To get people there.
Yeah, let's swap places once more, just for the mics. Yeah, gaming is something that some people are excited about to bring the next generation in, basically. What are your thoughts on all that? Because it has been tried a couple of times already. Like, there was basically, I mean, that's where Nostra came from, to some degree. CBD, the company that VHF worked at.
Yeah. Oh, it was
one of the main verticals of the company. In addition to payments and so on, was putting Satoshis into games, putting sats into games. Like, they put sats into Counter-Strike, and then you can frack for sats and so on, and like had some other games where basically, except for just winning imaginary internet points, you can win real sats.
Yeah.
Which, you know, the haters will say are also imaginary internet points, but, you know, let them be haters.
Yeah. And, your coffee
and,
with
and out of all that work, like, Lightning addresses came out of that, also, you know, by
VHF developed them, right? Yeah.
And Nostra later on, basically, which came out of his involvement with all these technologies and trying to make everything work, I guess, you know, in part. So yeah, some people are still trying to.
I saw a good number of Bitcoin games at BTC Prague. There was like this whole. This whole area of like 6, 7 couches.
Oh my God, you said it again on purpose.
Huh?
Was that on purpose?
Oh, Jesus.
Jesus Christ.
I'm not of that age.
We had one.
You primed me, I guess.
We had one game as well with, is it Chain Duel? The snake game where you can.
Yeah.
Like, that was in part developed during one of the cohorts. Oh. So that has a big presence on the gaming side on every conference, you know, because you can actually play each other for sats and you can actually lose money.
I haven't tried it actually yet.
Oh, it's cool. It's good. It's good. It works well.
Yeah, I kind of left my gaming days behind.
Same.
A while ago.
Same. I talked with Saza a little bit the last time. Because he came from the gaming side as well and was into Counter-Strike and very similar games than I played. And so that was an interesting factoid that I didn't know at all about him. So that was, it was very delightful to, you know, just...
He is a master of his craft. He's done like so many cool demos, this cohort, like Archipelago itself. Have you seen the intro?
Yeah,
the intro scene when it opens up. I literally got goosebumps like watching it, like the music and the way it introduces you.
Yeah, it's done really well. And he also helped a lot of, you know, the less UI, UX inclined
us
people.
Backenders.
The backenders, yeah. Let's call them the backenders.
Yeah.
he helped a bunch of people to polish their, well, their designs and their products and their interfaces, I guess.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was really cool that he participated in that manner and offered his expertise.
Yeah.
That was really good. Yeah, speaking of that, I was very impressed by, actually it was on the last day, the most recent Tollgate demo. That was super impressive. The installer that was shown off, that kind of, you know, figures out how to flash the device,
yeah,
and how to unlock it and all those kind of things.
Yeah.
It came such a long way because I still remember the first Tollgate demo.
Yeah.
Like when the idea was born, basically. And it's fantastic to see how it evolved. So you were quite involved in that as well, right? In the beginning, and probably still are.
Yeah, although I'm more on the protocol side itself, where we're making a lot of big changes or like rework for V2, as we learned a lot since the initial versions, and it's the reason, you know, we've trended towards FIPS and now have a chance to redo it on top of that, the way it's actually supposed to work. Some of the last puzzle pieces slot into place during this cohort. So I'm very excited about that, actually.
Yeah, cool. I mean, that's how it goes and how it should go. You just learn and iterate.
Yeah, I think I was in the first week, I was having the conversation with Cobrador about, like, I've been doing some work on Tollgate RS, like the Rust version with like some with the new protocol spec. And I was saying, like, I just can't make the push forward yet because something is missing. I didn't know what it was. It's like something felt off about like how it should look.
Okay.
And then had some good conversations with G-Sovereignty and like about how to basically properly price the toll gates. Because it's actually a really hard problem because I was doing it with mini bits, mints, and like, you know, everyone configures the mint that they use. But then what if they're down? You need to be able to reach them. If you're offline, you need to bootstrap, all that.
You also get rate limited, right?
That's one of the issues. That's a major pain in the ass,
Because the mints don't charge proper fees yet, and so like the best spam prevention mechanism is fees, period.
Yeah.
And if you don't have fees in place, you don't have the spam, proper spam
and mechanism. And even when the fees are in place, they still rate limit somehow.
Charge higher fees.
Yeah.
Tollgate users will pay them.
But what G-Sovereignty suggests is why don't you put a mint on every tollgate? And the idea there is that every tollgate gives out its own e-cash, which represents one byte. And you can sell those for whatever other mint cash you want. So I can sell those bytes for Minibits eCash, do a swap. But then you're in full control. You have no rate limits. You just need to sell it once, or like give it to people to use. And then, you know, you don't care how they got it. You just honor, like, the payout, the melting of the token is the service.
Yeah, I see.
So I give you a gigabyte on my router and you spend it with me.
Yeah.
You can't do anything else than that.
I see, interesting. Okay.
Which is it sounds like simple and obvious, but on an implementation side, like once I started to reason through that, all of my concerns I had went away with like mints being offline because you're already talking to the mint because it's on the router. All kinds of edge cases.
Lots of failure modes disappear.
Yeah, like how are you going to price the thing, right? What if you have different price mechanisms for other people? Like, how are you going to do that? That now all of that is separated out to the market, an open market, and I don't have to worry about that in the implementation side.
I see. No, that's interesting. Does the denomination matter at all? You said one token is one byte. That feels very small to me.
Yeah, but the nice thing is the tokens are powers of two, right? So you can just scale that up very easily.
So it doesn't really matter. And it's a clean, it's the
And it
cleanest.
Doesn't have to be one transaction per byte because you can just have the Spillman channels from sets and sports.
Yeah. Yeah, so you'll utilize the atomic swaps, you'll utilize Spillman channels.
Yes.
You'll use like lots of prior work goes into that.
Yeah, and we're no longer like tying it to bytes either, because we discovered along the way that tollgate is actually a payment mechanism or accounting mechanism for anything that streams. So this can be also kilowatts, water,
interesting. Okay.
Fuel, beer,
That was one of the first Lightning demos, was the beer tab.
Yeah.
Like in Berlin also at the Lightning conference. So that was one of the first. You know, it's interesting how the human mind works.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, let's sell beer.
I actually talked to the guy with the beer taps at BTC Prague.
Awesome.
He was explaining to me how he was going to like cut off part of the top so that he could fit it in his basement for testing.
Yeah, of course. So, yeah, if you want to get more tollgate users, I would highly encourage you to start with beer and kind of just as a basically DIY proof of concept. Like, this is how you can pay for the beer stream, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and just make all the moving pieces.
Yeah.
Not only work, but also explain them, basically, because it is a lot of esoteric concepts that come together in tollgate to make everything work, basically. Yeah. But yeah, to me, it's awesome to see it evolve and also kind of, you know, I mean, I think it's fair to say that Nosser plus eCash spawned tollgate to some degree, and tollgate spawned FIPS.
Definitely spawned FIPS.
And just seeing FIPS in production now, for example.
Yeah.
Like, for example, in Archipelago, like looping back to Zaza, one of the things he demoed was, and that he also talked about, like he integrated FIPS to make the companion app work. Yeah. Like he doesn't have to hole punch or network address translate or anything like that. And everything just worked and everything went way faster.
And did you know
that was really cool.
We actually made that work natively, so not overlay over IP, but we went to the top of the cowork and made a connection, a direct connection to where he was staying. And so we did
with
it.
Like a Pringles can?
Yeah,
basically.
Pretty much.
Nice.
We had a big dish. And so we did like.
So without internet.
Over there was Ethernet, yeah.
We did pure, pure mesh.
Yes.
Nice. Awesome.
So don't need IPs anymore.
Yeah.
It's proven now.
Yeah, I still. I have to see if I can find the pictures again and get permission to post them, because that's one of the, I think it was last cohort actually, you know, people going up the mountains with antennas and trying to do peak-to-peak communications, peak-to-peak mesh networking from one peak of the mountain to the other one.
Yeah.
And the, some of the pictures there were so cool, like at you know, the sun was just coming up and people were running around with like massive antennas and dishes and just, you know, a bunch of gear
getting
that you need to
biking,
make it work.
You know.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, it's amazing to see the...
We're not normal people.
No, definitely not. But it's amazing to see it all come together and now, you know, mostly just working, basically. It's yeah, quite the achievement. Yeah. And again, like coming back to tollgate, I remember in the first version, you had to send, you know, powers of two, but not too much.
Like because the string would get too long.
Exactly, yeah. you had to send exactly the right amount of eCash to not make it crash, and then maybe if everything works, you got like 30 seconds of internet or something.
Yeah.
And yeah, I remember I was the, my payment got through first.
Yeah.
So I was one of the first like alpha testers of tollgate.
Yeah.
During the demo day. So I'll forever be proud about that.
I had a while ago I had a friend over at my place and I was messing with a tollgate and I had hooked it up to my home router and he was asking he was there for the first time or using the internet. He was like, "What's the password?" So we entered the password and connected. It's like asking like to try tollgate. I was like, okay, you know, here, this is what you do. You get the eCash and pay for it. And only like an hour later or so, I found out that he didn't even want to try tollgate. He just wanted to use my internet, but I hooked up the LAN cable to the wrong side. So he was forced to pay for it.
did
how you onboard friends.
Did he manage?
He did manage, yeah.
There you go, see? Yeah. See, people are competent if they have to be. They'll figure it out.
It's called a shotgun onboarding.
Yeah, exactly. So tell me a little bit about FIPS, kind of where we at right now. I've heard rumors of a V2 coming.
Yeah.
I've heard even more rumors of like lots of exploits being sent to the repo by, you know, Kimi K3 and friends.
Well, thank God they're all,
where we at?
They're all very minor. No, not very minor, but they're all like things that aren't like leaking keys or intercepting traffic.
Yeah, okay. So it's all manageable.
Yeah, but you could like crash someone's nodes, that kind of stuff. So if you run an old version, update. So yeah, there was a bunch of those. Like, I think Jonathan counted, he made over 150 commits. Just security fixes.
Yeah, I mean, that's the time we're living, the times we're living in. It's just today in the morning I woke up and my routine, like I'm a routine person, like every day for me, basically.
So which of my software is vulnerable today?
I'm happiest when every day is the same, then I'm happiest. And so I'll get up, I'll go to the toilet and my phone's there. So I'll just, you know, browse my feeds and stuff. For like 5 minutes, I'll take a shower, I'll have breakfast, I'll get the kids ready, like those kind of things. And I saw today that the Liquid Network has a critical exploit.
Yeah.
So one more in the books, you know? After weeks of just mayhem, now there's, I'm not even sure how much it was, like 300 million or something ridiculous like that?
Yeah, 4,000 Bitcoin worth about $400
held hostage dollars. Supposedly by White Hat Hacker. Yeah. So, yeah.
I think they sent it back this morning.
Really?
Yeah, I think.
Okay.
Don't quote me on it, but
I'm slow. I saw the news this morning. So, so that's the times we're living in right now. Like, if there is an exploit, if there's a vulnerability, it will be found.
Yeah.
That's basically.
Yeah, it's a little bit scary sometimes.
Yeah, it's scary because humans fucking suck at writing code and at testing stuff and so on. Like it's everything's held together by like duct tape and good intentions.
Yeah.
So it's definitely a different world than it was, I don't know, a year ago or so, you know.
Like on that point, I do actually think that the type of technology we're working on here also helps with that to some
100%, 100%.
Like, there's so much less attack surface. If, for example, if you use FIPS, of course it's not been audited, etc. But you know, going forward, we hope, of course, it will. That if everything is encrypted on the base layer, you rip out all the software in between as well. That is basically duct tape and strings.
Yeah. You rip out the man in the middle, basically, right? Like also, you rip out what someone can do if he is in the middle.
Yeah.
Like if stuff is end-to-end encrypted.
Authentication with pub keys is way easier to validate than doing traditional.
Yeah, because you don't have a database of accounts.
Yeah.
That's kind of in the one workshop, I guess, I was trying to paint the picture of that on the whiteboard, right? Like if you, the world we are in right now, we moved from accounts to keys.
Yeah.
And keys are vastly superior from an attack vector perspective.
Yeah.
Humans absolutely suck at holding keys, but humans are even worse. Well,
computers suck at it too.
That too. But it's not something we are naturally born with. Like if I give you a precious gemstone or something, you have an intuition about it and how to keep it safe.
Yeah.
If I give you a cryptographic key, any intuition flies out the window.
Yeah.
You actually have to know about cryptography and how things work and so on. There is no intuition.
Yeah.
It's like if I have a photographic memory and I see your 12 words for just a split second, like you're wrecked forever.
Yeah.
And there's like we don't have a build-up intuition about
it. I never thought about that actually.
Yeah.
I assumed everyone's like me and forgets like the first word after.
No.
Can maybe memorize one word.
No, and it's not only photographic memory. Just the Facebook glasses or the Meta glasses or whatever.
Yeah.
Like you can't even, unless you're in a controlled environment, assume there is a camera pointed at your piece of paper.
God, I just saw this video on these like LG TVs this morning. That they're actively transcribing and recording everything you say. Which was like rumored up until now, mostly.
I built this entropy manual app. I'll link to it actually, and it's basically it guides people through how to how to roll the seed phrase with dice or coins and those kind of things.
Yeah.
And it explicitly says, like, never say the words out loud.
Yeah.
Because that's a very natural thing to do for people, right?
Yeah, like reading.
You go through the whole list and so on.
Bacon,
and then,
bacon.
Yeah, exactly. You read it out loud. And, well, wouldn't you know, like, your TV was listening,
yeah.
You know? And you don't even know where it ends up, you know? It gets automatically transcribed, it lands in the database gets leaked 5 years later,
yeah.
Someone on the dark web buys it, grabs it up, and just has...
LLM scanners.
Yeah, just find... Let's see if we can find any Bitcoin seeds, you know, in the transcripts.
Yeah.
And, yeah, again, like, there's no intuition on it. However, what I wanted to bring it back to keys actually being superior, if you have a list of usernames and passwords, all of this will be leaked and cracked and so on. Like every central
yeah.
repository of user information will actually
yeah.
eventually leak or you know, be subpoenaed or what have you. If you have cryptographic key material, like for example, the way I use Nostr, okay, you always have trust assumption. I think
yeah.
that's why the cold card thing was
yeah.
so absolutely devastating, because you the one thing you think you can trust, you weren't able to trust.
Yeah.
And the reason why I bring this up is because there is always, like, you can't fix this problem perfectly. Your trust assumptions always have to bottom
yeah.
out somewhere. So right now I trust Amber as my signer.
Yeah.
And my key is in Amber. But I don't have to paste the key
everywhere.
Into a million other apps.
Yeah.
And so if an app misbehaves, I can just revoke the permissions in Amber.
Yeah.
And someone actually wrote about this recently. I think they were also talking about Omar G. I'm not sure. I have to dig out the post. Maybe it was Verbericha or someone like that.
Yeah.
Building up rebuilding their whole computer infrastructure and the way they do things.
Yeah.
And having an external signer.
Yeah.
So basically for the important actions, you rely on a special privileged
yeah.
piece of hardware and you sign stuff.
Yeah.
And agent, like everything else is infected by agents / like
yeah.
Russian hackers. You don't care.
Yeah.
You know? And it's to like the shift we're going through right now, I think, is of that sort, because if
can play with that a lot. It's like
yeah.
how much you trust the system, like for how long, like I find logging into something I might not fully trust for like 5 minutes and only let it sign kind one notes.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. Absolutely. And I think in terms of how to think about our computing, that's how we should think about it. I mean, you just mentioned before, you rebuilt your whole machine on
yeah.
on Nix, right?
You know what was the easiest? It's getting back into Nostr accounts.
There you go.
It's just scan a QR and I'm in, and I don't expose
yeah.
any of it, and then try to
yeah.
get into, you know, I do need GitHub still, but get into GitHub, it's like, okay, oh shit, I need my password manager on the device.
Yeah.
Now all my passwords are on there,
yeah.
Encrypted, but they're on there. And then I need to enter it, and then I need my two-factor code, and
you really have to trust the password manager, and it's
yeah.
gonna be decrypted for a little bit, you know,
yeah,
and so on and so on and so on. And if you invite lots of agentic stuff onto your system, like again, like Omar G, for example,
yeah.
you mentioned before as well, and it's definitely all trending in that direction. I mean, it's a one-way street. There is no,
yeah.
there is no turning back, and you can either lean into it early or you can lean into it late.
Yeah.
And so you have to think about stuff differently. I'm even considering right now setting up an offline machine, basically, in some
yeah,
to some degree,
same.
Or even for the data that is important to me, just, you know, doing a ritual once a year, just blasting everything on, like, you know, 100 SD cards or whatever, or however
yeah.
many I need, and just storing it cold.
Yeah,
because I'm obviously leaning into the agentic stuff. Like I've been YOLO mode from the beginning, you
yeah.
know, ever since YOLO mode was a thing. So I
yeah,
of course try to
like,
be careful with my keys and so on, but.
You can have very advanced malware as the models can run on your computer.
Yeah, that's how you.
Stay dormant for a long time.
Exactly, and I think that's the way to describe agents in general. It's
malware.
Very advanced malware.
Yes.
That might work in your favor sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, that's the right...
So far they do, as they're still
it's
buying the
right
markets.
Mode of operation,
yeah.
you know? It's considered very advanced malware. And, you know, like, don't give your agents access to something that you might regret later.
Yeah. yeah
it's. But again, like, it's hard to navigate right now because
yeah.
stuff is so powerful.
Yeah.
Unless you're, you know, like, part of...
our echo chamber, basically. Like, just if you look around the general population, everyone gives ChatGPT access to absolutely everything.
Yeah.
The whole life, all the emails, all the chats, all their everything, all their private communication, all their finances, like ChatGPT, do my taxes for me, you know, like those kind of things. And so, yeah, we've crossed the Rubicon a long time ago, and it's just about, I think for us, the question is how can we make maximum use of this technology without shooting ourselves in the foot too much. And this involves, you know, key material access, like all those kind of things that we've been working on. But anyway, I've been talking too much. So back to FIPS. What's the plan for V2? So V1 is, as far as I can tell, a very, like a great system.
But what are the plans for V2? Like that has proven to work and do what we want. V2 is like the do it right version. So Jonathan is writing it as an RFC spec, like so fully specced out to the dot, where you can't, there's nothing ambiguous about the implementation.
All right.
So that will, one of the main things will be scaling, because right now we can scale up until like 1600 nodes.
Yeah.
And then the moon filters start filling up, which means that it doesn't crash the system, but it makes it harder to find peers, so do the discovery. If you are sending a packet to someone. So it might not get there, it might get there slower, that kind of stuff. Can't continue.
We'll have to turn around.
It's the forbidden zone.
Government intervention. Foils our plans, as always.
Yeah. €300 fine.
A 30 to 300, so you know, you might get a VZ.
Yeah.
All right, and so what's the ETA on the spec? Because writing an RFC spec is not easy.
Yeah, I'm a little scared to give an ETA on Thomas's Jonathan's behalf. So I'll let that to him.
All right, but it's in the works.
He's working hard on it. Yeah. And one of the exciting things about it too is that you're gonna have application keys instead of the node key, the pub keys. So right now you're addressing the node, but it's kind of terrible because we're gonna have to start signing the path to the root.
So that's a similar idea to IP plus port.
but every application gets its own.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
But there's a reason why ports had to be introduced.
I'm not sure what the exact reason was, but yeah, I think it's mostly been just the lack of IPs.
Yeah.
And like it's the same place, but different applications.
Yeah.
Now you can disconnect that fully from each other. And since we have problems with like this is a security thing with like the signing of the root, the path to the root.
Yeah.
We want to sign the entire path because you can otherwise spoof things.
Which okay, interesting.
Causes like local disturbances.
Yeah.
So for that we have that. So that disconnect is very nice. There's the native API experimental version created during Sovereign, where you can send basically raw binary to another FIPS node without TCP, TCP, IP, UDP, nothing like that. So it's straight using the FIPS API.
All right, awesome. Awesome. Yeah. What's kind of, I remember you guys went to some other conferences in the tollgate context at least. You have something planned in the upcoming months like that? Like kind of spreading the good word?
The gospel.
Spreading the gospel.
there's Dark Prague is coming up and BTC++ in Berlin.
Yeah.
I probably won't be able to go, but there will be people that work on tollgate.
All right. Anything outside the echo chamber?
Vietnam.
That's still very much inside the echo chamber.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll come to Vietnam.
Yeah.
I'm just curious about. There was one conference where Constant went to and some other Nostra people. That was
BTC Prague.
No, it was a decentralized social network conference, and no one really knew much about Nostra. They went there to spread the gospel as well, basically. And I'd be curious, okay. Like I'd be very interested in seeing that happen without having to go myself, you know?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
I'm old and grumpy and have other things to do. But I think there is ample opportunity, especially on the FIP side. Like there's the Local First conference.
Yeah.
We talked about Local First in the past in a couple of conversations that came up, because there is an actual Local First community and they have an actual Local First conference and so on.
Yeah.
And I think it would be very worthwhile to send some of our sleeper agents there and just kind of let the people know that FIPS exists.
Yeah, I think the Local First crowd is definitely probably going to be interested in something.
Yeah, they should be primed for all this.
Yeah.
Like that's what it's about.
I think it solves a lot of the issues they've been hitting for years.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Like those are eternal issues. How can I make my devices talk to each other?
Yeah.
How can I log in without relying on a central database?
Yeah.
And so on and so on. Yeah, that would be cool. But yeah, talk to me about Vietnam. Like, what's the status? What is the thing? What are we talking about? How did it come to be?
Yeah.
Who should go there?
We had some some ideas with some alumni to go with a bunch of us and like get some place in Vietnam probably, and just stay there for a few months and work on the projects that you know we all have individually, but just be in the same place where. The only thing we carry over directly from what we know from Sovenc is the Friday demos, like no program, nothing.
Yeah.
The only thing is like you just show what you have at the end of the week and like create an environment where people can get like excited what they work on, share ideas and deliberate.
Yeah, get some feedback from peers as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I asked Sandwich why Vietnam, and his one-line answer was, because it's cheap.
Yeah.
So, I like that.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's economic true, like, incentives align.
Yeah, there's, you know, a lot of places, like Madeira, are not the cheapest to be for a long time. So it's opens the door for a lot of people, so also younger people, to just go there for a while.
I mean, Southeast Asia is a great place if you're in your 20s or so, or like if you, I'm not even sure if it's an age thing. It's kind of a life period thing. Like if you're because if you're married and you have family and you have kids, then it's just not the best place anymore.
Yeah.
But if you're single and you're traveling and exactly and you can actually live like a nomad and so on, and you have very little responsibilities otherwise, especially like no children, those kind of things.
Yeah.
Then like Southeast Asia is fantastic. Like I've spent, you know, like many years of my 20s actually in those places. And I would highly encourage anyone who's interested in that stuff to. What's the best way right now? Probably reach out to you or Sandwich or Hazard?
Yeah, for now just reach out to us.
Yeah.
We'll have a website up soon.
Soon
TM. There will be a very short
2 weeks.
Application window probably, so you have to be quick.
Yeah, it's the idea is to just basically gather a larger complex, right? For 3 months almost, right? I think that's the time span.
It's like a traveling circus.
And one important thing that Sandwich told me as well is like everyone has their own room.
Yes.
Like it's not gonna be a full blown commune.
No bunk beds.
It's everyone has their own place.
Yeah.
And their own kind of, you know, where you can hide and just be alone and recharge.
Yeah.
I'm mentioning this specifically because also at Sovereign Engineering, it's one of the biggest problems. Like we, the people we want to have and want to attract are by the very nature, like highly introverted, and most of them also highly autistic people. And just like, you know, like just 20 minutes talking to someone else will just drain the social batteries completely. And so people need to have, you know, getaway places and need to be able to self-isolate. See, just like this guy, you know, like sitting
Yeah,
on the beach, fully clothed, laptop open. Yeah. Like
that's the vibe we're going for.
We should probably talk to him.
Yeah. Have you ever thought, considered being a sovereign engineer?
Do you know you could work also without the internet, you know? Just mesh to mesh.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's see how it goes. Like
Part of it, I think, is also involving the local communities, not just people from other countries that come in, but also like have interaction with the locals.
Yeah.
See if they want to
spread the gospel some more.
Yeah.
Go preach.
Yeah, especially on the technology side. Like there's a lot that people in other places might be interested in. Where here in like the Western world, where like. Gets waved away. It's like, oh, we have good internet, or we have all this already.
Yeah, no, that's very true. Like low connectivity is in many parts of Europe, it's not a thing. In other parts of the world, you're just fighting with it constantly, and any technological solution that makes that issue or that problem go away, it's like will be welcomed with open arms.
Yeah,
and. Yeah, like in Central Europe, you don't even know it's a thing. You always have like high-speed internet everywhere. Doesn't matter where you go.
Yeah, and I find that here, like you more often hit resistance rather than it's like, oh, that's an interesting technology that it can actually solve problems, real problems for real people.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure. Like, do you know, is there what kind of existing communities are in Vietnam? I know there is a big Bitcoin community in Thailand, in Chiang Mai.
Yeah. Vietnam, okay. I don't know actually.
So you'll have to see what's there.
Yeah.
Find some people when you're on the ground. Yeah, sounds good. Sounds good. Yeah, generally speaking, I think sovereign engineering still has two main issues. It's, or let me rephrase that, because I don't even think it's a problem. I don't think it's an issue. Or hasn't been up to now, but we are at a pivot point now where we want to address those. And yeah, I mentioned one of them already with kind of if you have family and if you are of a certain age and are a certain senior and you have like two or three kids or whatever, it's very hard to come to Madeira for 6 weeks and make that work with the family and make room for that, make time for that. And if you actually bring the family, as you mentioned, it's very expensive and so on.
And they have to demo too.
They have to demo too. We had shout out to all the kids, like Jeff's kids, demoed successfully this cohort.
Yes.
Like that was really cool to see. So the kids are all right, you know, next generation is coming along nicely.
Yeah.
But still, it's very hard if you have family to actually come for 6 weeks. That's definitely one thing we want to solve for going forward. So what we're thinking right now is that we want to do shorter cohorts, do like a dedicated week, like one cycle. Like we do weekly cycles and usually it's for 6 weeks, but I think we can adjust the program so that it works in 1 week and just do it like a little bit more intense, a little bit different, but then it should work for people. Like, again, if you have family, if you have a wife, sneaking away for 1 week somewhere that's close by, somewhere in Central Europe or wherever, like if you're from Europe and you can just jump into the train or the car and drive for an hour or two, that should be doable. And on the other side, attracting younger people, like most of the people that come to Sovereign Engineering are of a certain senior and just kind of, you know, have been rug pulled once or twice. There is a reason why you're interested in Bitcoin and you stuck around. Yeah. And there is a reason why you're interested in Oster and you stuck around. And if you're like 18, the chances are very low.
You haven't seen it before social media at all.
Like that also. Yeah. It's also like you never lost your bank account. Like you barely had a bank account, you know.
I haven't lost it yet.
No, but it's you know what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
It's you're just not old enough to go through the motions of multiple rug pulls in a row to actually appreciate the stuff that we are working on. But I think the residency that you're planning in Vietnam can be very attractive. Like if you're younger and you're interested in technology and you're kind of enticed by these backpacking countries anyway, then it could be an interesting avenue to bring younger people into the mix and kind of let them explore this world and get to know some of the people that are working on this stuff and so on.
Yeah, and they can, you know, make use of all the expertise that is there, like the alumni that's, you know about Noster and have been in it for years, that can help fix certain issues that you might be hitting along the way.
Yeah, and I like the
pool to
The mesh network thing. I think young people love to tinker with gadgets, you know?
Yeah.
So all you have to do probably is just to do the next Quake 3 LAN party over FIPS.
Yeah.
That will probably be enough. But they probably won't even know what Quake 3 is, so you have to explain that.
Whatever the local equivalent is.
It's probably Fortnite now. Can you not? Or that's probably also not true anymore. Isn't it Roblox now?
It shows my age, I don't know.
I'm too old for this shit.
I think it's Roblox. Yeah. But they're captured. I think you can't like play your
own. You can't self-host?
No, I don't think you can.
I would highly doubt it that you could.
I think Minecraft is still a thing.
That's true. Yeah. You can probably still there's still a version somewhere that you can self-host.
Yeah.
So Minecraft over FIPS could be a thing.
Yeah, it's actually one of the things I listed on the website is like, you can do this over FIPS. It shows my own childhood.
Good. you played Minecraft, yeah?
Back in the day, yeah.
Ah, okay. Shows our age difference.
Yeah.
I see.
Good memories.
So yeah, Vietnam is going to start relatively soon, right? Like that's the plan, to start in
December, January.
Yeah, and in February, right?
Yeah. And in February somewhere.
The Lunar New Year.
Yeah.
Nice, sounds like a plan. Yeah, we'll have to figure out what we are going to do on the sovereign engineering side next year. We definitely want to do a summer cohort again, probably adjust it again a little bit, have like a break in the middle, because people need a break. Like, that's the main feedback we got this time around, is that, break week
would
be
good.
Yeah, exactly. I'm tired, boss. Me too. If people would only know. So yeah, that's what we're going to try the next time around, probably like have a full break in week 4. And yeah, probably in like spring next year, we want to do the first like 1 week cohort, focusing, like doing it a little bit different, trying to get more people into the mix, like new people into the mix, trying to hopefully also get one or two graybeards involved, I think. I think Jonathan is just such a treasure, and I'm very, very grateful that he, decided to join us you need seasoned people that just take the younger, less experienced people by the hand and also kind of lead by example and show the younger generation how it's done.
There was actually a moment where he pulled up the old emails from the Cypherpunk mailing list.
Yeah.
His own emails as well. We were going through them, like reading that. All of it just seems like it could have been written today.
Yeah.
A lot of it. So it's almost very, it's like a resurgence of the same thing. You can really feel that. And that's what he's saying as well.
Yeah. Yeah, those ideas and those ideals have been around for a long time. And some of them were made manifest. I mean, we do have end-to-end encryption, for example.
Yeah.
And we do have strong encryption that's like, any consumer device can do strong encryption, basically.
Yeah.
Like, it's not even hard to do. It's even default for many devices. And so a large part, or like some parts of it, absolutely materialized.
Yeah.
Some others haven't at all, and large parts of the internet, I mean the cache, the e-cache one is an obvious one.
Yeah.
Like untraceable digital cache is just not a thing.
Yeah.
Especially not uncensorable digital cache. Like everyone is completely okay with being censored. And just look at YouTube. YouTube is my go-to example. Every YouTube creator knows that they can be demonetized.
Say certain things and not others. Yeah, yeah.
And it's ridiculous right now because it's the things you can't even talk about abortion, for example, you know, yeah. without being immediately demonetized, or yeah. or about rape or what have you. Like if you just want to talk about the news of your little town. And yeah. whatever, like you can't without fully self-censoring or bleeping the words yeah. because the algorithm will immediately demonetize you or shadow ban you. And of course, if you have like 2 or 3 or 4 offenses, you'll be just permabanned yeah. basically, yeah. you know. And it's...
They must be very anxious people by now.
No, it's so a very... It's
having to worry about it
it's
every
just,
day.
It's just a very strange world kind of we're living in the yeah. sense of society being fully okay with that, which we are, like there's no yeah. big revolt against YouTube or anything like that.
Yeah.
And the same goes on the banking infrastructure side, like bank accounts being frozen and bank accounts being shut down for whatever bullshit reason is a completely normal thing, especially for neobanks.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it happened to almost every Bitcoin I know, like you have some suspicious transfers or whatever, and your stuff just gets frozen or shut down and you have no recourse at all. And it's just something we're absolutely yeah. okay with.
Yeah.
And on the other hand, like from a societal perspective, like the fact that cash is going away, like most of society is perfectly fine with that if you look in the Scandinavian countries and in the yeah. developed world and so on. And so large parts of the cypherpunk vision have not panned out.
Yeah.
And also in terms of connectivity, just me being able to connect with you always has to go through an intermediary right now.
Yeah.
That's why FIPS to me is so exciting, because it completely flips that. And if yeah. I want to connect with you and we use, you know, like something that speaks FIPS and we use Nostr, there's no intermediaries that yeah. can do anything about it. And that's what makes it so exciting, and that's what follows in the cypherpunk vision, I would say.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm glad that again, like just to repeat myself, I feel very blessed that Jonathan is around and someone of his yeah, just his senior, basically. Like yeah. he, of course, he has like massive expertise and lots of experience in the open source community and everything. But also, you know, if you're twice as old as most of the other participants, you just saw, you know, like yeah. 5 times more shit.
Yeah.
That's how it scales.
Yeah.
And yeah, it just gives you the necessary experience and wisdom to hopefully not repeat the mistakes of the past. So that's, I think.
Yeah, yeah. I really hope so.
So I want to get more people like that involved.
Yeah.
Coming back to the idea of the shorter cohorts and the mountain cohort, we kind of are in the process of planning. But yeah, we'll see. We'll see how it's gonna go. But what do you think is kind of, if you could tweak things, what would you tweak on the sovereign engineering side? And I also realize it's the worst moment to ask, fully decompressed, fully exhausted after like 6 weeks.
No, I think the format is good. I do think like a pivot of some sorts might be necessary. The fact that we've seen, and I think that's a good sign, that we see repeated demos, like that have topics that have come up in previous cohorts as well. Getting these demos along the same lines, I think, is a confirmation that like the good ideas, like we've had them come up. That there's probably not that many new, like completely untouched areas.
Mm.
So then we can yeah. start like pick out all the best parts.
Yeah.
And start assembling those into something that covers a higher layer above it.
Yeah.
And tackle those problems.
Yeah, I talked with Jo about this as well, and basically the conclusion he came to as well, or I think the conclusion multiple people came to, is that most of the building blocks are there now. Like
yeah.
in the first two cohorts in particular, we talked a lot about like what kind of underlying building blocks would we need to rebuild X or to make problem Y go yeah. away. And we laid it all out, like more or less organically and over time. And now it really feels like FIPS was the one of the large missing puzzle pieces.
Closing piece.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now between yeah, Bitcoin, eCash, Nostr, cryptographic identities, end sites, Blossom servers, those kind of things. Tollgate and FIPS. We have a lot of building blocks to work with now.
Yeah.
Naplets. Shout out to Sandwich.
Big one, yeah. Yeah, I really like the possibilities around asynchronicity, that, you know, we always assume synchronous communication with the internet. That with Nostr plus Blossom and FIPS for, you know, bring data from A to B, short distance at least. You can use that to transfer stuff over time as well, because everything is signed, of course. So you don't even need to be actively connected with the person on the other end either, which I think can be a very powerful dynamic that we haven't explored yet. Because like apps that work offline, like you're adamant about this for offline readers.
Yeah.
Right? They're not very common. Everything still assumes online, even Nostr apps.
Yeah, I hate it so much.
Yeah,
I can't even begin to describe it. I hate it so much that I vibe coded my own thing over the last, I don't know, month now or so, or 1.5 months, which works fully offline, of course.
Yeah.
So I finally have Boris now, which is what Highlighter was supposed to be, but Pablo disappeared from the face of the earth and Highlighter with him. So I had to build it myself, but I'm very happy with it. I use it every day.
Yeah, I've actually used it a few times as well and found myself coming back to a Nostr app.
There you go. It has Nostr Wallet Connect now. It gets better every day.
You can zap.
Because I just use it, and if a feature is weird or missing or I find a bug, I just record a voice note.
Yeah.
And that's it. Clankers will pick it up later on and fix it and push a new release. Yeah. I don't have to do anything. Nice. So the vibe line is working as intended.
Did you implement it? Your Clanker implemented as like you have a certain amount of money per week you want to split amongst all authors that you read? Or?
No. Just as a regular set button at the very end.
Okay, yeah.
Like you can, if you make it all the way to the end, you can do the usual Nostr stuff. In the reading case, that's basically moving it to your archive, expressing your appreciation in a non-monetary way, or expressing your appreciation in a monetary way with SAPs. And it's all one tap and kind of similar to how it works on Wisp and Amethyst and so on, or Primal or what have you. And
same battery usage as well?
Say again?
Same battery usage?
No, I hope it's less. But that's a good point. I would have to check. Yeah. But I'm not hammering the relays that much because I'm just, I'm only interested in, nothing I care about is real time.
Yeah.
So it's basically a fetch once and work with what we have kind of situation.
Yeah.
Because I'm only interested in highlights and long form content. And so it's way easier to work with and way...
Yeah, you can do a lot of like proactively ingesting data, keep storing it local even before you know you might want to read it.
And I'm sure all that's done.
Yeah, yeah.
The people that built it are very smart,
yeah.
If you want to call them people. But those were some fine models, some fine models with some fine prompts.
Maybe that you touch on one of my few gripes with AI is that people blame stuff on their clankers.
It's like blaming shit on your power tools, you know?
Yeah. It's like, no,
stupid
Excel
chainsaw.
Did it.
It always cuts it wrong. Yeah, it is a strange world, though. It's clankers are or can be very autonomous, and they also can be very stupid. And I feel... I'm not sure, it's hard to tell. I mean, we just got a new batch of Frontier models. GPT-6 was released 3 days ago or something like that.
Yeah.
And the better the models get, the less of these idiosyncratic behaviors they seem to have.
Yeah.
Because I was just about to say, like, that was true a year ago. Like, all the models, they were all stupid in their own way.
Yeah.
Like some were way too sycophantic, some others were way too rule following, you know, some others were way too less rule following and so on. But it seems that the labs have fixed most of this stuff, and they are actually equivalent to a smart coworker now, basically, to some degree. And of course, hyper capable when it comes to coding, like more capable than any human.
And they refuse their job sometimes now.
Sure.
I won't Each let, in their own unique way.
I won't let you do that, Dave. I mean, we're there. We're definitely there. And especially when it comes to cybersecurity stuff or what have you, then they will refuse. Or, you know, like...
Kimmy didn't, so that's why we got the security review in, so we're very happy with that.
That's
better than being naive about it and not having them.
That's the big irony of our time, that the Chinese open weight models are actually the uncensored ones.
Yeah.
And the American ones are fully cocked, basically, when it comes to that. So, I wonder what kind of ship that is. I saw it in the morning already, and it's just so big, I have no idea. But it looks like
it's like one of those that like
industrial one, right?
Sand onto beaches.
Oh, something like that, yeah, potentially. Okay.
Are we going to have a sandy beach in Funchal?
Massive ship.
Yeah, it always fascinates me, those islands in the background. Like some days you cannot see them at all. Like today is very vague.
Yeah.
A couple days ago, it's like pin sharp.
Clear, yeah. Yeah, it just shows you how dynamic the atmosphere is as well.
Yeah.
There's a great meme about the flat earthers. It's like, you know, what you will see according to flat earthers on a clear day, and you just see all the wonders of the world, like the pyramids and the Eiffel Tower and so on. Like,
and
just in one line, basically. Yeah. Yeah, let's see how it goes. So basically, we are trying to figure out how to keep sovereign engineering alive, first and foremost, how to make it better, how to involve more people, how to involve younger people eventually also. Like that's, again, I'm very hopeful on the Vietnam thing. I hope you can get some good motivated people involved that can actually spend multiple weeks or like 3 months with you guys.
Yeah.
And getting more experienced, more senior people involved as well on the other side. And I hope we can make that work next year if we just do very focused, like focused cohorts for like 1 week of intense collaboration on like one focus area, or one building block, or one kind of technology, or one project, or what have you. And we'll probably do the first trial run of that. Something like, I don't know, March, April or so next year. And then we'll see where we are. I mean, stuff will definitely keep evolving, and like we said just now with the clankers and so on, stuff will just keep getting better and also different. I mean, again, like coming back to OMRG, and I highly recommend, by the way, everyone listen to the 5-hour interview Lex Friedman did with DHH. They get into that as well, where just using natural language as the main compute interface, also for your own machine.
Yeah.
Like you've talked about NICs already and how you have a clanker and you can just say like, you know, like install this, install that, do this, do that. Yeah. And it will all just work because it's a highly defined like language that's not even, it's not really made for human consumption, but clankers are really good with it and it's very strict. And the clanker represents kind of the English speaking human language.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter which language.
I saw one of the excerpts from one of his interviews that the way they do bug reports or like crash reports. So if something happens, crashes on the OS, you get a pop-up that says like, do you want to debug this with an agent?
Yeah.
And then they have skills that automatically either report the bug or create a pull request
to
fix your issue on your machine. I think that's going to be very interesting from a software quality perspective, because it's one of the hardest thing is that of any development cycle is that feedback loop.
Yeah, it's how Amethyst does it as well. Boris will do the same very soon.
Yeah.
Just if something crashes, send a NIP17 DM.
Yeah.
you know, like if you want, like single tap, and you just send the whole stack trace and everything directly to the maintainer, basically.
Yeah, I think like, that's maybe we should do that with FIPS too. Optin, of course.
Yeah, no, it's a very, very easy thing to do, and it's just, I mean, you give it to a capable clanker, the thing will be fixed.
Yeah.
Like, that's... the deeper the stack trace, the better, you know? It's just... they don't care. They need specifics. Yeah, that's how I did it in like developing the Android app. Like, if something would crash, I would just, in a voice note, explain what I did.
Yeah.
And just, like, I would talk to a product manager, basically, right? It's like, I tried to do this and that and so on, and it didn't work as I expected. And blah, blah, blah. And I'll just ramble for, like, whatever. However long it takes.
Yeah.
Usually it feels like 20 minutes, but it's only 2 minutes.
Yeah.
and again, then it just sends, and the clanker does its thing.
Parts,
and they're really good at zeroing in. Like, they're really good at compressing, basically.
Yeah.
They're not as good on expanding, like, yet. That's why if you have an idea for a blog post and you let a clanker write it, it's just, like, complete dog shit, and they'll hallucinate the wrong things.
I'm still of the opinion, though, that the like low-level design stuff, like FIPS is, that you still need a lot of the human judgment and what to build where. It helps. It's incredible for debugging.
That's the key word, judgment.
Yeah.
They don't have good judgment because they don't actually live in the world.
Yeah, it's like the stage that it's at now, it could have never gotten there with just the LLMs. Probably a year from now, also not.
Absolutely. Like actually figuring out what's relevant, again, like hat tip to John Verveke, and bringing the right judgment to the table for the project, that will stay in the human domain for quite a while.
Yeah.
We talked about this in the past. Now it's not as much a problem anymore because there is more Noster in the training data and also more Noster stuff online.
Yeah.
But in the beginning, if you wanted to build anything on the Noster site with a clanker, they would always try to revert back to username, password.
Yeah.
And like, I forgot my password kind of things, you know? Like they were so bad at working with the concepts that Noster encapsulates.
Yeah.
They would always try to revert back to building a server, building a backend, building a username, password thing, and so on. Like making all the mistakes, basically. Let's go in the shade.
Yeah.
Before we are completely toast. But yeah, I'll be out of steam very soon anyway.
Yeah. I feel like I need an ice cold beer.
Maybe that's it, the missing alcohol.
Yeah, that's the missing piece.
Like you had a poncha fueled 6 weeks with some, what was it, Chinese rice
whiskey.
Rum, rice whiskey or something like that.
Yeah, just 62%.
Yeah, mixed in and so on.
I'm glad I didn't take more than one sip of that.
That's what kept everyone afloat, and now everyone is like fully destroyed and has withdrawal symptoms.
Yeah,
that's what it feels like to me. But we'll see where we are at in a year from now, or less than that probably. But
yeah, I think we'll see a lot of these pieces integrate.
Yeah,
I that's what I hope to see, but I think that's likely.
Yeah,
Naplets help with that, I think, to make it easier for people to just develop little apps and let the human judgment be done by like just a smaller group of people that like focus just on that part.
What will you be working on in terms of when you speak about integrating the pieces? What's something? What's a pet project of yours?
Myco.
Yeah.
Is
nice.
I treat it still as a mostly proof of concept to experiment with FIPS on mobile. Because it helps me find all the bugs with multi-transport, because that's kind of the first time it's ever been done in that way.
Yeah.
Plus the way of like sharing things over a mesh like organically. That is what I want to like keep working on, also as a means to fix bugs on FIPS, and then like a push forward with tollgates. Now that we have all the components for the protocol, I think now it's just full steam ahead and actually building and deploying that also cross-platform, not just OpenWRT routers.
Nice. On the micro side, will it be able to send files as well?
already does.
Okay, good. That's something that Sherry brought up when she was frustrated in the beginning that you can only send apps and not files.
Yeah. So that works now. It's gotten a little bit more reliable since the demo. So,
nice. Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. How was your experience with SAP Store publishing and all that kind of things?
Oh, it's a breeze.
It's so great, right?
Yeah. Just point at some skill files and that was it. It was so easy.
I didn't even do that. I just went to publish it to SAP Store. You figure it out.
Yeah. I guess I'm more manual than you are.
It's very hard to be overly specific in voice notes, you know?
Yeah.
You're just
true.
You have to be vague always. by definition. That's actually the hardest part about the vibe line is getting the getting the vocabulary right so that the voice transcription doesn't fuck up. So if I say VHF doesn't come out. It doesn't matter what transcriber you use.
Yeah.
You need a thing on top. Like usually
it will
transcribe as VHF, which I don't even know what it is, but it's like VHS tapes or whatever. And so I just have a substitution in place that replaces VHF every time it pops up with VHF.
Yeah. Now make sure you never have to talk about VHF.
It has its problems. It's not a perfect system.
Yeah.
But it has worked for me so far. And I will have to type some things, of course. Like if there's some stuff where I still have to go back to the keyboard, but that's gonna be my plan for the future, be as AFK as possible.
Yeah.
Spend as much time AFK as possible. That's why I also enjoy these walks so much.
Yeah.
I really, really enjoy this and I wanna do it more. That's the downside of like in the cohort, it's too hectic. It's almost impossible to go on walks with people.
Yeah.
And after the cohort, most people are leaving. But this will also be fixed over time. Like more people are moving now to Madeira.
Just make sure everyone moves to where you are.
But yeah, I want to write about this as well. Kind of, you know, going more offline or something like that. Like becoming AFK or going AFK.
Yeah, it's getting more about the right ideas and what to work on than to try to push too hard on the same thing.
Be glued to the screen at all times. Yeah, no, it's just not healthy. They also on the DHH interview, like one of the segments was surviving internet hate, and just the internet is just not a very healthy place. Like it doesn't matter if it's Twitter or Nostr or whatever, it's just being glued to the screen is just not very
well. Yeah, I think it's like replacing things that are real with synthetics.
Yeah.
Like, social media is synthetic for real human connection.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I'm very glad we have a lot of like the real human connection here.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for that, we wouldn't last. I wouldn't last here.
Oh no, for sure. And it would just be very different. Like in the earlier cohorts.
Yeah, we have to backtrack on a lot of those things.
In the earlier cohorts, people suggested like, we should also do this online. Why can't we do it online? And I was always vehemently against it because it would just be so different. Like once people are behind the screen, like every interaction is just so different. And the whole point of sovereign engineering in the first place was to do it in person.
Yeah.
And the main reason was, it's all the stuff I learned from John Verveke, where it's you can't substitute it. And there is no substitution for in-person interaction, in part because it's so high bandwidth.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I say something, and you immediately make a face, or you immediately, like you have a bodily reaction to it immediately that you can't even control.
Yeah.
That's also why people laugh and so on, you know, like it's one beautiful thing about laughter is that you can't fake it, you can't control it. That's why people go to comedy shows and so on.
We all know these awkward moments in video calls where like everyone's kind of laughing, but everyone's muted. So the joke kind
fantastic.
Of dies
great.
In a very awkward way.
No, it's great. Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. And so doing, like what we want to do here is actually build new stuff and figure out potential solutions to really hard problems. And you need high bandwidth interaction for it. Like you need to tap into the distributed cognition. The distributed cognition only emerges if you are in the room together, basically. I mean, there is an argument to be made of distributed cognition being in the Twitter hive mind and being in books and so on, but it's not what we're aiming for. We're aiming for something that's very dynamic and very alive, and hopefully
not, how should I put it? There is social interaction online as well, for sure, you know, and there's good things happening online as well, for sure. But a lot of the, like, let's take Twitter as the prime example, like now X, of course. It's still a very unhealthy place, and most of the interactions are very unhealthy. And I think it doesn't matter. I used to think that it's only an incentives problem. I now think it's still mostly an incentives problem. However, putting people behind screens is a large part of the problem.
Yeah.
Like, people don't have faces, they have usernames. People aren't even full personas, they are profiles, you know? And Nostr doesn't fix this either. Like Nostr works in a very similar way. You don't get the full spectrum of the person when you interact with them on Nostr. Yeah. Or like, just when you interact with them online.
Closer to who they are in person, I found so far.
It's Nostr, again, like, I think Nostr fixes the incentives to a large degree, and I think also Nostr fixes the...
It fixes the shadow profile.
Not the shadow banning, the self-censorship part is what it fixes. The things we mentioned before on the YouTube site, that people are afraid to say certain words and so on, because otherwise they will be deplatformed or debanked and so on and so forth, or demonetized. That doesn't exist on Nostr. And I think, like, if we continue to build out Nostr in the right way, it will never exist on Nostr. Like, it's you'll be free to say whatever you want. In the worst case, you have to host your own relay, you know, like, provide parts of your own infrastructure and so on. But
why I think it's a very bad idea to try to recreate what Twitter is on Nostr. In Nostr, it's like you're trying to make cigarettes without nicotine, and tell people, it's like, use these.
I love that comparison.
It's gonna be better for you. Like, of course no one's gonna do it.
I love that comparison. That's a great one. I still think the internet needs a public place, basically.
Yeah.
And everyone thinks it's X now because of King Elon. I don't think it's X. I still think it's Nostr.
Yeah.
I think it's Nostr and personal websites and so on. The blogosphere, if you want, or what have you. That was the idea back in the day. And I still think that very much exists, but I find myself being less interested in all that to some degree, even though I just purpose built an app just to read all this stuff.
Yeah.
But I'm...
Well, I find there to be way less, like, useless content in long form than there is on the kind ones. Like, you can scroll for half an hour and not see anything useful. But if I, like, the couple times I've used Boris, like, I scroll through and I actually see things that I find interesting.
Yeah.
Of course, that your discovery mechanism helps with that.
Yeah, it focuses on highlights.
But I think long form just makes for better content.
Let's find a different place in the shade. It's just noise appears out of nowhere. That's just how it goes.
We've made it a long time without any noise.
Yeah. No, it's at first it was tourists. Now there's a truck. Like, what the fuck? I never saw a truck here on this footpath ever.
Yeah.
And of course now there's a truck. There's going to be leaf blowers anytime soon. You know? You have leaf blowers in your bio, right?
Yeah, it's one of my things that grinds my gears. It's leaf blowers and what else was it? Grass.
Why do you hate leaf blowers so much?
It's about their inconsistent noise levels, and like, the people really enjoy just like making those yanking noises the whole time.
Okay, so they turn it on and switch it off and turn it on.
Like
again.
Yeah, like the change in RPM the whole time.
Yeah, I see.
They love that.
I see.
And I don't.
let's stand here for another minute until the truck catches up,
and
then I don't know what to do.
We'll
figure it out.
We'll
figure it out. Yeah, same for me. No, but just to kind of finalize the thought, the reason why I decided to start Sovereign Engineering in the first place, and I still really enjoy doing it, is because there is a thirst for in-person stuff.
Yeah.
And you can't really replace it with online interaction. You have to be actually in person. Yeah. You have to be in the same place. I don't even think, for example, if you have like high fidelity holographic video that's 3D with touch, still it wouldn't work.
Yeah.
It's still it's different if you are in person and you're in the trenches and you're actually suffering together and you can't switch it off and you can't press mute and so on and so forth. Like all the Black Mirror stuff, you know?
For me, it ties into like all the synthetic stuff. That's why I'm still here, because it's people that care about real things, like real connection, real food, real things we buy that don't, like, you know, pretend to be something they're not, or like be of good quality. You know, if none of this like software pans out as we hope it will, at least like we have all these other things that I have in my life now that are not synthetic. I'm not like online chronically. I'm trying to eat better food that is made by people that care about the thing here on the island that is made local. Right? It's way more than just the software.
I read a great article. I actually discovered it with Boris. about the off-punks. You know what an off-punk is?
I read that one.
You read that one?
Yeah.
See? Yeah, we'll have to link to it.
Yeah.
That's a great one, and it summarized kind of what you were just saying in the last couple of sentences. It's not that off-punks are Luddites, you know? Yeah. It's just you're interested in technology that actually lasts and that actually does what it says on the tin, you know? Yeah. I'm still very enthusiastic when it comes to technology. I'm just not very enthusiastic when it comes to signing up for TikTok.
Yeah.
But I have my own stuff. I have my own whatever, Netflix and you know, all the things that everyone uses. I just know that it won't go away and it won't rug pull me. Like, I really care about rug pulls and not being rug pulled. That's also why I mention it in the sovereign engineering context all the time in my, you know, presentations and so on. It's like, build the things in a way so that you can't be rug pulled. You can't be rug pulled, and also you can't rug pull your users. Like, if you build infrastructure, or if you build an app, like, again, like back to Boris for the example, like, I'm trying to practice what I preach. It's fully open source. It doesn't have any server. It's just an OSTA client. It will always work.
Yeah.
And it's just, it uses your profile for relay discovery. It does full outbox. So if you run your own relays and just self-host everything, it will always work. There is no reason why it will ever shut you out. And I think tools like this are extremely important. And of course, the early cypherpunks and the early free software people and open source people, they realized it. Like, that's why, you know, Linux is a thing. That's why Unix is a thing, and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'll stop rambling. I'm dying of heat stroke as well.
Yeah, and the truck is catching up.
And the truck is catching up. So Vietnam is next for you.
Probably.
In terms of sovereign technology.
Yeah.
So that's, I think the working title is sovereign residency, right? More or less.
Yeah.
homepage. TBD. Yeah. More information. TBD.
Everything. Yeah. Everything. Yeah. TBD.
Just DM Sandwich or DM Arian. Just reach out, and in case you're interested.
Yeah.
And yeah,
or
it's gonna be
with people that you know might be interested.
Yeah. Mm. It's gonna be an experiment all over again. Probably still less hectic than the first cohort, because like people literally almost died.
Don't speak too soon.
I have to repeat that over and over again. The first cohort was like just pure mayhem. People collapsing on hikes and jumping into the ocean without knowing how to swim. Good times. Good times. All right.
Okay, man.
Any last words?
Amen.
Amen. All right. That's a good one. Amen for the
Amen for Seco 6.
More sex. We need to make this t-shirt.
Yeah.
That's what Sherry said. We need more sex.